Thanks for joining us. It's day 22 of Israel's war on the Gaza Strip. Israel is pounding the besieged territory from ground, sea, and air as fighting is underway between resistance groups and regime forces. Israel has confirmed that its ground troops are fighting inside of Gaza. It says infantry, armored engineering, and artillery forces are participating in the attacks on Gaza, accompanied by heavy air fire. The Palestinian resistance group Hamas says its fighters are confronting Israeli troops in various locations. The group says it is fully prepared to confront Israeli ground forces. It has fired dozens of rockets and missiles to areas across the occupied territories, including the city of Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, Israel continues to launch deadly airstrikes on Gaza. Palestinians say that the besieged territory witnessed the heaviest bombardment since the war began in the past 24 hours.
It's as if an earthquake has shaken the entire area. This was the most intense bombardment the world has ever witnessed. We're just civilians, children, women, and unarmed people sleeping peacefully. Everything has been destroyed. Houses have crumbled over the heads of the residents, including children. No one is paying us any attention. This is a policy of human execution. If it were a natural earthquake, it would have been much easier than what happened last night. There were random bombardments from all directions, from the ground, sea, and air. They were all bombarding us last night. Who are they bombarding? Civilians, including women and children, who were peacefully sleeping in their homes in the dead of night?
Parents across Gaza have been writing their children's names on their bodies so that they can identify or can be identified after Israeli air attacks. The Gaza Health Ministry says the heavy Israeli bombardment has turned Gaza into a ball of fire. It says Israel's actions have caused complete paralysis of the health system, medical teams, and ambulances. International media and aid agencies say that they lost contact with staff in Gaza amid a near-total communications blackout. More than 7,700 Palestinians have so far been killed in Israel's relentless bombardment of Gaza that began on October 7. 70% of the casualties are women, children, and the elderly. The UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk says that there is the potential for thousands more civilians to die if Israel presses ahead with its attacks. The UN General Assembly has overwhelmingly approved the resolution that calls for a humanitarian truce in the Gaza Strip. The non-binding resolution demands an immediate, durable, and sustained humanitarian truce. It also condemns all acts of violence against civilians, as the death toll from the Israeli onslaught tops 7,300, including thousands of women and children. The resolution proposed by Jordan was adopted with 120 votes in favor, 14 votes against, and 45 abstentions. The Hamas resistance movement has welcomed the move. Israel, however, has claimed the UN no longer holds any legitimacy. The U.S., the main supporter of the Israeli regime in the war, voted against the resolution. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has called for international support, especially from Muslim countries, for Palestinian people in a phone call with Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani. Raisi said that Gaza needs help more than ever in order to stop the relentless crimes and genocide committed by the Israeli regime's war machine. Iran's president said that Muslim countries need to adopt a decisive and united stance in support of the oppressed nation. For his part, Qatar's Emir said regional and Muslim countries can stop the Israeli war machine through their unity. Sheikh Tamim said the Israeli regime has violated all international rules and moral values and is not afraid of committing any kind of atrocity. He said the Western support for Israel shows their double standards. Pro-Palestinian rallies have been held across the world to demand an end to the Israeli bloodshed in Gaza amid the regime's brutal aggression against the blockaded territory. In London, tens of thousands marched through the streets of the capital to call for a stop to the Israeli carnage. They waved Palestinian flags in a show of solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine and Istanbul. Hundreds of thousands held protest rallies to condemn the regime's onslaught on Gaza. Protesters called for the immediate ceasefire, urging President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to bring an end to the Israeli genocide of Palestinians. They also urged him to cut off diplomatic relations with the Israeli regime. Several other cities, including the French capital Paris, Malaysian capital Kuala Lumpur, and the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil were the scene of similar protests. The families of the Israeli captives held by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas have demanded an immediate explanation from the regime on the fate of the detainees. The families are angry over the uncertainty surrounding the fate of the captives as the Israeli military steps up its air and ground strikes on Gaza. The group representing the captives' families says none of the Israeli officials bothered to meet with him or with them to explain whether an Israeli ground invasion of Gaza would endanger the lives of the detainees. Let's cross on over to Beirut and listen to the Hamas representative, Ghazal Hamad, who's speaking.
Come back again, and I think this picture of the occupation has been broken forever, and I think they will not able to restore this image in the soon or later. I just want to say again and again that regarding the lies and the allegation of the occupation regarding a Shifa hospital, we want to say that Shifa hospital is a hospital for treatment, for medical purposes, and it is not used for Hamas leaders or military leaders. It is just for the medical and for health treatment for our people in Gaza Strip. I think this is kind of excuse for the occupation in order to target the hospital and to make more massacres, more slaughters against our civilians in Gaza Strip. Thank you very much.
All right, that was Ghazal Hamad, who's a Hamas representative who's speaking in Beirut. Seems to have been centered on the fact that the Shifa Hospital, contrary to what the Israeli regime is saying, that Hamas is using it for military purposes or anything along those lines is a lie, that it is not used for that. And he said that that hospital needs to be used for health treatment and for treatment of patients and for Israel not to spread those lies. Hamas flatly rejects that. Now we cross on over to southern Lebanon. I'll talk to Mariam Saleh. Mariam, it's all yours.
Well, basically, we said earlier that we heard the sounds of explosions. We know now from Hezbollah statements that there were three operations that were conducted seemingly simultaneous, since we heard the explosions one after the other. And there, in their statements, they stress that they have targeted three different posts. We have first the Birkatrisha post, which is close, and another point also, the Jurdah point. And those were done with rockets and guided missiles and mortar shells as well, in order to basically hit their targets. They said they hit their targets directly. Another one at around 2:30 in the afternoon, they said that with also guided missiles, they targeted the post of Al-Abad, which is one of the biggest posts, actually, in South Lebanon, in the occupied, of course, Palestinian territory. Another one also later on was in the Mawqa' Al-Marj. So those three posts today have been targeted by the resistance in Lebanon. The resistance in Lebanon has, for now, seems they have used mortar fires, mortar missiles, and guided missiles, in addition to anti-armor and anti-tank missiles as well. They have proven with their documented videos that they have targeted and hit their targets very specifically and precisely. And this is what the case is here in Lebanon. We expected that there are probably later now we might hear more sounds of bombings and infiltration, perhaps, attempts by Hezbollah. That has not been clearly verified, whether Hezbollah has attempted any sort of infiltration into the post themselves. For now, they are sticking to these guided missiles or mortar shells into those posts and hitting specific targets, whether it is the Merkava tank. Of course, we spoke earlier about the Merkava tank and the significance of that, which is called the Invincible Tank. And that seems to basically symbolize the Israeli army in itself, that this war machine is not capable of protecting its own soldiers. It's not capable of protecting the home front as long as the Israelis and the Israeli entity in itself is an aggressive entity, and they continue their aggressive policies against the Palestinian people, which has reached a new level now, something even worse than genocidal. People are talking about something which is worse than the so-called Holocaust that they spoke about in the past as against the Jews, and today what's happening against the Palestinians is something that is unthinkable, actually. We are just hearing right now the sound of the surveillance planes. They have been basically following us wherever we go, and we are always asked, either by Hezbollah security or the Lebanese army, to basically try to move away. Now we supposed to be in a place which is considered safe, moving away from the bases, though we do see them from the far further ends of these mountains. You could probably see one of the main settlements and kibbutz, which is basically the Miskaf Ha'am one. And then behind that, we also have, on that end, we have also the Shiba Farms and the Kfar Shuba Hills. Now, those are the bases that have also been targeted by Hezbollah on and on. Hezbollah has, of course, went into this basically in an acceleration of three different phases. First of all, beginning with the Lebanese-occupied territory in the Shabab Farms and the Kfar Shuba Hills. They began with that on October 8th. Then later on, that developed to go and reach and target all the posts all along the southern border. The Israelis are quite fearful. You also have the U.S. very much apprehensive of what Hezbollah can do. They have advised the Israelis not to go into a full ground invasion and incursion inside Gaza, since they do have intelligence that Hamas is ready. And Hamas has said, of course, very openly that they are ready for any sort of incursion, for a possible invasion by the Israeli forces. They are talking about capabilities that are probably very surprising to the Israelis, despite the fact that they have been under a blockade for more than a decade and a half. So you have one of the biggest possible strengths of Hamas are the tunnels, and that is something that has been a mystery for the Israeli military as well as U.S. military and U.S. experts. They have tried to basically map those tunnels unsuccessfully. So we know that yesterday the Israelis were testing their abilities. They were testing their capability of entering. It's not the first time. We know that before they have tried to do that, and they know that this was not successful. They did that in light of opposition, not only from those who are the families of the captives, the prisoners who are being held by Hamas, of course, in order to see an exchange of prisoners, of the many men and women and children who are kept in Israeli jails, but also opposition from countries like the United States, which is its closest ally. The U.S., of course, is calling on the Israelis to have a workable plan. The U.S. is definitely standing in the face and opposing any sort of ceasefire, though we did have calls from the United Nations for a truce, which seems the Israelis do not heed to. This was the same here in Lebanon throughout the years of occupation, the years of aggressions against Lebanon. The Israelis do not basically care about any sort of international resolution that is enforced upon it. They think international resolutions are only for others to abide by, but not for Israel itself. And it has, of course, reportedly violated every single international law on earth. And so basically, this is what we're looking at right now. We're looking at a country, we heard also from the Turkish President Erdogan stressing that this madness for Israel needs to stop. So what we are seeing is definitely madness. There's absolutely no plan, just shelling and killing. And what they are trying to do, and we heard it from Israeli officials, they want to wipe out all of Gaza in attempts to first crush Hamas. They had that objective at first. Then they basically lessened the extent of their objectives. They had another objective was basically to remove Hamas from power inside Gaza. And that reminds a lot of people here in Lebanon of the 2006 war objectives. Their objectives in the beginning were to basically launch some sort of an operation to retrieve the soldiers unconditionally and to crush Hezbollah. Now, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, on the first day of the war, right after Hezbollah took the two soldiers prisoner, he told them very clearly,
thank you for
these
that.
Soldiers will not be given back until we go to negotiations. And it seems the Israelis might have to do the same
thank you
in
for
Gaza.
That. Thank you so much. Mariam Saleh there from southern Lebanon. We do appreciate that coverage.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
The list of hospitals and other public facilities bombed by American forces, as well as their British counterparts, is quite long. Zionists have followed the same model to instill fear in Palestinians. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, on the eve of U.S. President Joe Biden's visit to the occupied Palestinian territories, the Zionist regime's warplanes raided a hospital in the besieged Gaza Strip, killing at least 700 people, mostly children and women. The exact death toll in a devastating strike on Al-Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza is not known yet, with some reports putting it at more than 1,000. It was a massacre, according to eyewitnesses. Despite attempts by the Zionist regime to shift the blame on the Gaza-based Palestinian resistance groups, in that order, evidence suggests that it was the Zionist regime's handiwork. Hamas said the attack mostly killed internally displaced people who had taken refuge at a hospital, considering it safe amid the indiscriminate Zionist regime aerial blitz that has so far claimed the lives of 3,300 people in the Gaza Strip. The fact that the hospital bombing came hours before Biden landed at the Tel Aviv airport is telling. Biden has unequivocally defended the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in the coastal Gaza Strip, even amplifying unsubstantiated claims that were denied by the Zionist regime officials themselves. He said he had seen the video in which the Zionist regime children were beheaded by Hamas resistance fighters, parroting the lie that was started by an Israeli regime journalist and later repeated by the Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's spokesman on a live show broadcast by CNN News Network. The claim eventually proved to be a big lie, but the American president did not bother to offer an apology. At a joint press conference with Netanyahu in Tel Aviv recently, Biden said Washington would provide the embattled regime with everything it needed to defend itself, while repeating another crude Israeli lie that the hospital attack was caused by a misfired rocket by Palestine. U.S. President likened the Hamas resistance group to Daesh and described the group's Al-Aqsa Storm operation in the wee hours of Saturday morning, October 7th, as a slaughter. Biden told Netanyahu, giving him a clean sheet, "Based on what I have seen, it appears as though it was not you." But there is a lot of people out there not sure. So we've got to overcome a lot of things. Biden's unfounded assertions came after the Zionist regime's military spokesperson Daniel Hagari showed imagery and asserted that the propellant from the rocket had ignited and caused the explosion. The fact that Netanyahu ordered the deadly strike hours before Biden's arrival and eventually got the clean sheet from the US president shows the war crime was carried out with Washington's backing. The bombing of hospitals and other civilian facilities is not an alien concept for American warmongers themselves. They have done it in multiple countries, including Afghanistan and Iraq, for decades. The anniversary of the bombing of Kunduz Trauma Center in northern Afghanistan's Kunduz province on October 3, 2015, including its intensive care unit, emergency rooms, labs, X-ray unit, outpatient department, mental health, and physiotherapy ward was observed just 2 weeks ago. At least 42 people, including patients, staff, and caretakers, were killed in the devastating attack carried out by an American gunship, which marked one of the deadliest chapters in the 20-year-long war. The hospital was operated by Doctors Without Borders, and the only thing Americans did was to apologize to MSF. The victims and their families were never provided justice. According to eyewitnesses, the USAC-130 Hercules gunship fired 211 shells on the main hospital building where Afghan patients were sleeping in their beds or were being operated on the operation theater. The then U.S. commander in Afghanistan, John F. Campbell, later admitted that the hospital was mistakenly struck without a shred of remorse and without any promise of justice and accountability. Americans destroyed hospitals in Iraq as well during years of military occupation of the country. In April 2003, U.S. aircraft pounded a Red Crescent maternity hospital in Baghdad, killing several people. The 56-bedroom Al-Mansur Hospital was the first IRCS health facility in the war-torn country. The list of hospitals and other public facilities bombed by American forces, as well as their British counterparts, is quite long. Zionists have followed the same model to instill fear in Palestinians. However, these formulas are bound to fail. They failed in Afghanistan and Iraq, and now they are failing in Palestine. The hospital bombing recently has only galvanized the Palestinian resistance. It has also exposed the deep alliance between Zionists and Americans and how they have backed each other's horrendous war crimes for years, including the bombardment of hospitals and killing of civilians. The international law is clear on hospital bombings. The Fourth Geneva Convention on the Protection of Civilian Persons During War prohibits the targeting of civilians, especially in schools and hospitals. But as we all know, international law does not apply to lawless entities. According to Wafa News Agency, the Palestinian Ministry of Health has said on October 24th the death toll from the ongoing Israeli occupation forces' aggression against the Gaza Strip and the West Bank since October 7th has risen to more than 5,795 dead. 5,700 in the Gaza Strip, 95 in the West Bank, and about 18,000 wounded, 16,000 in the Gaza Strip and 1,836 in the West Bank. It's said that 70% of the dead were children, women and elderly, and that 2,360 were children, 40% of the dead, while 1,292 were women and 295 were elderly. The Ministry of Health said 28 trucks that entered the Gaza Strip recently constituted only 3% of the daily import rate before the aggression. It said it monitored cases and smallpox, scabies and diarrhea as a result of a poor sanitary environment and the use of water from unsafe sources. The ministry pointed out that 3 additional hospitals were out of service, bringing the number of hospitals that stopped working as a result of the bombing or running out of fuel to 10 hospitals out of 35 in the Gaza Strip, which represents 28%, and that 10,600 liters of fuel were secured from the World Health Organization and UNRWA to Al-Shifa Hospital. Wafa News Agency added 5 hospitals had set up tents on their premises to accommodate the overcrowding, and their daily consumption of medical consumables was equivalent to their monthly consumption in the days before the aggression, while the shortage of safe water reached 3 liters per capita per day out of the 50 liters to 100 liters recommended by the World Health Organization. The Ministry of Health estimated the number of displaced people in the Gaza Strip at about 1.4 million, with 685,000 displaced among other families, 565,000 displaced in 148 schools affiliated with the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Refugees, UNRWA, and 101,000 in mosques, churches, and public places, and 70,000 in 67 public schools. The report indicated that 42% of the housing units in the Gaza Strip were destroyed as a result of the violent Israeli regime bombardment since the start of aggression on October 7. The number of completely destroyed housing units reached 26,684, 140,500 were partially destroyed, and 9 hospitals were out of service after their destruction, in addition to 178 educational institutions, including 140 government schools and 20 UNRWA schools.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach toward supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajil fa Brothers and sisters, after we counted and discussed the different effects for supplications, different advantages for supplications, we said that we must be aware of some points. The fact is that there are some hindrances on the way to supplication that Imam Ali alayhi salam specifically mentions them in the Kumail supplication. Imam says that there are some obstacles on the way of supplication that if are not removed by the supplicant, there will be definitely no response to the supplication. So concerning this issue, I mean the issue of hindrances and obstacles on the way of response to the supplications, there is a tradition narrated from Ma'adh ibn Jabal from the Prophet ﷺ that refers to these most important obstacles on the way of supplication. In that tradition, the Holy Prophet ﷺ refers to the innate aspects of the affairs, I mean those aspects that are unknown even by the angels. In this tradition, the obstacles are enumerated. Prophet ﷺ says, backbiting one's brothers in religion is one important hindrance. And the Prophet ﷺ starts to count many other obstacles. An action through which God's servant wishes to gain some worldly benefits, pride, jealousy towards those who engage in knowledge and practice, lack of mercy towards the others, action through which a God's servant wishes publicity, an action which is not carried out for the sake of God, belittling the others by being macromaniac, referring to the other's filth by pretending to be clean, not providing for the hereafter in this world, finding faults with the others, whispering in the presence of the others, being malevolent towards the others. These are all the collections of the obstacles that we need to be aware of. This inventory is a collection of obstacles before the acceptance of our actions. It is clear that these things can be considered as impediments in the way of supplications. This is because supplication is itself a kind of worship, and what actually supplication does is that it takes us closer to God, and it is responded if it is accepted. But if it fails to function properly, it naturally will not be accepted.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javob onjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, now that we here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God speaks with us too. It
It's not a dream, this is so true. And we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable. Knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of Dua.
Brothers and sisters, the School of Supplication has many different features in which sublime intentions are set by the sacred legislator to educate people. From now on, we will list some of them and try to discuss some aspects of these features educating people to be completely functional in their societies and actually help all the people to be from among the perfect men. The first objective, which is one of the most significant features in the sphere of education, is the fact that in all supplications, we may not find a case where the causation is referred to non-God or non-divine names. I mean, in other words, in all these supplications, the absolute cause is God. Nothing, no one other than the Almighty Allah, can ever take place without his consent. Among the divine knowledge and sciences, the closest science to this school is Gnosticism, which ascribes to God the cause of creating all the creatures, and that every creature in the world stems from one of God's positions and features. So, one of the features of the infallible Imams, of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam, is to guide their followers towards the Supreme God. Regarding this issue, we will refer to some supplications, and this will lead us to appreciate the magnificent content of the sacred texts of the Ahlul Bayt. Of course, in each supplication, only those parts we will refer that are crucial to our argumentation. So from now on, we will have a look at the significant, most significant features that actually cause education of human beings, that actually educate perfect men in the School of Supplications. In the next episode, inshallah, we'll start discussing them. Thank you for staying with us. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye. Allah.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be looking at an interesting question, and that question is related to a topic that we have been covering in a couple of sessions now, and that is the topic of backbiting. Backbiting, as you know, is one of the grave sins. It has been prohibited in the Quran and the Hadith. By way of example, in one place in the Holy Quran, we read the following: "And do not backbite about one another. Will any of you love to eat the flesh of his dead brother? You would hate it. And be wary of Allah. Indeed, Allah is all clement, all merciful." So backbiting is definitely one of the sins that, you know, God has, and one of the actions that God has prohibited. And in fact, it is one of the grave sins. In one hadith from the Holy Prophet, it has even been mentioned that backbiting is worse than adultery. The Prophet said, "Backbiting is worse than adultery," at which he was asked, "How so?" He replied, "A man commits adultery, then repents, and Allah pardons him for it, whereas the backbiter is not forgiven until his victim forgives him." The question that we want to ask today about backbiting is the relation between backbiting and faith and religion. So we want to ask whether a person can preserve his faith while he is backbiting his fellow Muslim brother or not. In response to this question, we can say that according to the hadith, there is a close connection between backbiting and faith, and the person who backbites, slowly and gradually his faith begins to wear away. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "Backbiting eats away at a Muslim's faith faster than a gangrenous sore eats away to the inside." And he also said, "Whoever backbites a fellow man or woman, Allah neither accepts his prayer nor his fasting for 40 days and nights until and unless the victim of his backbiting forgives him." So it's necessary for us to be careful and try to avoid this grave sin. In some of our previous sessions, we talked about the meaning of backbiting. And there we said that backbiting is when we speak behind the back of a believer in faith in a way that he would not like and which he would be upset with if he were to find out about it. In one hadith of the Holy Prophet, it's been mentioned that on the day of resurrection, a man will be brought forth to stand before Allah, and his book of deeds will be presented to him, and he will not see any of his good deeds therein, upon which he will exclaim, "My God, this is not my book, for verily I do not see any of my acts of obedience therein." So he will be told, "Verily your Lord neither loses nor forgets deeds, but your deeds have gone because of your backbiting people." Then another man will be brought forth, and he will be presented his book of deeds, and he will see many acts of obedience recorded therein. And he will exclaim, "My God, this is not my book, for verily I did not perform all these acts of obedience." And he will be told, "It is because so-and-so backbit you, so his deeds have been transferred to you." Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at backbiting and its effects on faith in the light of the Quran and the Hadith. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
in the limelight.
Western regimes have provided cover for the Zionist regime's lawless extremism and possible end goal of massive dispossession and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, the Zionist regime has declared a total war on Gaza, imposing a genocidal siege that has cut off supplies of food, electricity and fuel, making no provision whatsoever to exempt civilians, most of whom have no direct contact with the military activities. Article 55 of Geneva 4th sets forth the duty of the Zionist regime as occupying power to ensure that the people living in the territory it occupies have adequate water, food, and medicines. But the Zionist regime's indiscriminate retaliation has included repeated nighttime aerial bombardments of residential areas, alongside the forbidden targeting of hospitals, schools, and UN buildings, where many Palestinians have sought shelter under these extraordinary conditions. A 24-hour evacuation order directed at 1.1 million Palestinians living in northern Gaza, without the provision of reasonable time to arrange such a dangerous departure from long-term places of residence, was aggravated by the lack of a safe and habitable place for Palestinians to go, thus intensifying the dangers facing civilians in Gaza and their suffering. Such a measure amounts to extreme collective punishment, which is prohibited by Article 33 of Geneva 4th. It has less to do with security than with driving Palestinians out of Gaza, thereby implementing the endgame visions of the Zionist regime's extremist coalition government. It is relevant to note that Michael Link, the UN's special rapporteur for Palestine, submitted a detailed report to the agency on why the Zionist regime's authority as occupying power should be terminated, given its failure to comply with applicable international human rights law. This recommendation was ignored by the UN, but the General Assembly was sufficiently distressed by the Zionist regime's pattern of behavior in occupied Palestine that it requested an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice on the continuing legality of the Zionist regime's status as an occupying power within the framework of Geneva 4th. The case is currently under consideration by the court. If the West continues to endorse the double standards on display during the humanitarian catastrophe unfolding in Gaza, it will serve as a reminder that the post-colonial world retains an ethos of Orientalist racism when it comes to addressing issues of peace and justice in the West Asia region. By failing to advocate for a ceasefire, Western regimes have given a green light to the Zionist regime's agenda of collective punishment, which might itself be grotesque cover for the Zionist regime's end goal of massive dispossession and ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. According to the website of the New Arab, the Zionist regime has carried out one of its deadliest campaigns on Gaza, dropping over 6,000 bombs on the besieged Palestinian enclave. While the Western regimes have largely backed the Zionist regime, dissenting voices have emerged in London, Washington, and Berlin. Pro-Palestinian protests erupted in many Western cities recently, urging their governments to uphold international law and cease arming the child killer regime of Israel. In some cases, authorities detained or threatened to detain those who participated, with media outlets accusing the protesters of supporting military groups. The U.S. has long been perhaps the Zionist regime's strongest supporter, giving it financial and military aid amounting $158 billion since the Second World War, more than any other nation. Since October 7 attack, Washington has sent top officials financial and military aid to Tel Aviv. It has also sent the biggest warship in the world to the Eastern Mediterranean. The website of the New Arab added U.S. President Joe Biden, who had previously tried to keep a distance from the Zionist regime's far-right government, said in a speech at the White House, "We stand with Israel and we will make sure Israel has what it needs to take care of its citizens, defend itself and respond to this attack." Also, UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak deployed two Royal Navy ships and surveillance aircraft to support the child killer regime of Israel. Downing Street's office reported the military package included P-8 surveillance planes, other surveillance assets, two auxiliary ships, three Merlin helicopters, and a company of Royal Marines. British officials from both the government and opposition have also repeated the Zionist regime claims about Hamas beheading babies without verifying allegations. Like the UK and the US, Germany has also offered the Zionist regime military aid and promised to issue a formal ban on activity by or in support of resistance groups. Scholz added that groups such as Samedun, which was behind the demonstrations, will be banned. Videos of German police using violence against demonstrators in Berlin have circulated on social media.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies.
31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my son, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. I've dug the earth with my hands, my bare hands. I've searched for my roots in this soil, this holy land, the land which is yours and which is mine, Palestine. And you, good earth, glorious land, son to you, see, I offer my son to you, only to you. I lifted his head from his mother's arms, I put him on your chest, still in red, to water you, you of my roots, Palestine, 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 since the story of my anger and your blood, the story of our mother's tears and your brother's cry, have to take us on, have to take us on, lullaby, my darling, lullaby, my dear, sleep in peace, sleep in silence. Since somebody inside my aching heart, somebody inside our land, our blood joins in sacrifice, sacrifice. Your blood roots me here, this land. Your blood.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Day 22 of the Israeli war in Gaza. Tel Aviv continues with its relentless bombardment of the besieged strip, which has claimed the lives of over 7,300 Palestinians. Hamas resistance movement says it is fully prepared to confront Israeli ground invasion into the Gaza Strip. and protests continue around the globe in support of Palestine. Demonstrators condemn Israel for its brutal killings of innocent civilians in Gaza.